Justine, you looking good over there? Okay, go ahead. I don't even have to say something about this. All right, whatever.
So I'm sitting here. We're ready to do the podcast, or I think we're ready to do it. Roger's putting his headphones
on. Yeah, I'm going
to
edit this out. You know, I'm going to edit this whole story out. I'm sorry.
I hear
this
snapping sound or something. It goes, ow, and all that. So what happened? You hit your...
I was putting my headphones on, and they slipped out of the right side of my hand, and so the earpiece smacked me in the side of the head. I didn't know if it was even capable of doing that. So anyway, so if I'm not at my best, well, there you go.
Welcome to the Fields Brothers Show podcast. This is Jeff Fields. I am here with my older brother, Roger, and we are here just to talk about what it's like to live on this side of the cross and to help folks kind of focus on the grace of God and Jesus Christ and the new covenant. The cross changed everything, and so we want to keep that in mind day to day on this side of the cross. And so this is kind of the calm before the storm, Roger. We're getting a huge
how big is
snow
it
in. They're saying, you know, just the time we think it's getting ready to be spring all around us, and we
in Kentucky it's never
everybody says
well I know about this, but
everybody every place I've ever lived,
it may be true
say,
every place I'm just saying it's true in Kentucky. It may be, you know, I'm not saying we're the exception, so, just saying that it means nothing to have good weather in March.
So we're supposed to get 3 to 5 inches of snow and possibly more here in the next day or so.
Tonight, I think. Isn't it starting tonight?
Yeah. That's kind of why we're recording this right now, for sure, to make sure we get in before that. You're having a problem with your glasses there. Are you getting them adjusted?
I'm getting there, yeah. So, all right.
We've been on a trip. Do you want any updates on your trip? You mentioned last time that you were going to, where was it you were going?
Well, so. I went to the Bahamas, but I read a post by another pastor. He took some vacation or something. And so because I'm a man of God, I'm going to explain to you what I was doing. Okay.
Okay.
You would think maybe I was just taking a vacation to the Bahamas.
It was a mission trip though.
No, right? I was, let me get
purpose
this right.
Driven.
I was engaging God's creation.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, that sounds more spiritual than hanging out of the Bahamas, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does. I've been there.
I was engaging.
So how was it? Had a good trip again.
It was great, except it was too windy. It was windy.
Is it always windy there?
Or no. But for the first 4 or 5 days, it was windy because some kind of front was coming in. They said it was a cold front, but didn't really get that cold. So I don't know.
So what's the downside with it being windy? Just not as warm and...
The downside is, I mean, you can blow sand at your into your skin at about 60 miles an hour.
Okay, so really windy. Okay, so we're not just talking about messing up a volleyball game.
Yeah,
or something
like
that.
It was pretty windy. Okay. Yeah. So there's places where you could get to kind of block the wind too. I mean, it's so, you know, the thing about these places, I've never done this before. It's an all inclusive resort, which means there's food out all the time. And these huge buffets, you end up eating more food than a human being should be allowed to eat. But, you know, so I'm back. Glad to be back.
Well, glad to have you back here. I was at, this is, update. I don't think I did tell you about this. I don't know if you heard about it from Mom or not, but a decision, we had an opportunity for a trip this summer. And I'm going to bring it up now, just other than just catching up on stuff. But it also brings up a good point about decision making. A lot of people struggle, a lot of Christians, struggle with making decisions and all this. So anyway, we had the opportunity.
Well, explain why. Why would you? What's your theory on that? Why do Christians have a hard time?
Well,
making
let me
decisions?
Tell you my decision. Right. Then we can use that as kind of a taking off point for that. So I had the friend of mine, Tim, that you know, that used to live around here, golfing friend that moved to Alabama. Yep. He goes to Scotland every year, and for the summer for several weeks, he and his wife. And so this year he is organizing. So just don't get cynical about the fact that this relates to golf here. So just set that aside and be willing to go along with that. So
go right ahead.
So anyway, he is organizing a couple's golf trip, basically where the men play golf and the women do non-golf stuff, to Scotland this summer for 10 days. Part of it was going to include watching the British Open golf tournament in St. Andrews, the old course, as it's called. And so Scotland's being the, you know, that's
I'm
the
assuming
birthplace
St. Andrews
golf.
Was not a cathedral. It's a golf course. Is that right?
Well, the golf course is a cathedral. It's,
is
we kind of, no, I mean, not, it depends on your definition of cathedral, but.
Oh,
I mean,
okay. It's not. All right. Okay. So for you, it's a holy,
it's
for
holy
you
ground.
Golfers,
it is
it's
holy
a holy ground.
Ground.
So, okay. All right.
So anyway, but we had the opportunity, and you know, I mean, cost is not a cheap cost, but for us to, like, 10 days to be in Northern Scotland for a few days with Tim and his wife and a few others, not a large group, just like we would be, the probably there'd be about six couples, not counting the host.
Now, when you golf in Scotland, you got to wear the little knickers, whatever they wear, you know.
I don't think so.
The little Scottish.
So. Anyway, you're getting off topic.
All right, okay.
So we go there, and then we go down to St. Andrews for a few days and stay at an apartment, 5-minute walk from the golf course, and just be a part of, you know, they have it in St. Andrews about once every 6 or 7 years. It's on a rotation, so it's, you know, it's not there all the time. British Open, you know, one of the four majors.
Now, this is the one where you can use a golf cart. Is that right?
No.
No. I don't think there's one of them that you're allowed to use a golf cart.
No. Well, no. Short answer is no. Seniors, I think they can. And there may be, I don't know, a certain
I thought that was a rift between the British British tournaments and the American tournaments. Isn't there some different rule in the...
I mean, most folks over there don't use carts anytime.
Really? Okay.
Because that was the thing. If I went, we were going to be playing golf almost every day if we wanted to. But, you know, so look at that. You know, it's a huge trip. Would no doubt be parts of it would be a blast, but it's just the hassle of a transatlantic flight and... Yeah. And all that goes into that, especially right now, and figuring out what, you know, all the protocols are with the pandemic and all this stuff. And
it's not fun, even
and
going
so went
to
the Bahamas. Through, you know, first we thought, oh, no, we're, then we got thinking, well, you know, we could. And so I found myself, I mean, I went, and Teresa was willing to do either way. So she basically, you know, I'd be happy to go, happy not to go. So it was pretty much all my decision. And I was really torn for like a week or week and a half. You know, some days I kind of lean toward going.
Now it would tear me apart. I mean, really, to go golfing every day for 10 days.
See, you're
going to a transatlantic air flight to go golfing. I'd have to really ponder. That'd be a struggle.
Here, though, okay. But I get to be with some people that, you know, anyway, there'd be a lot of neat people I would meet. And so, I mean, aspects that'd be great. But, you know, be gone from here for not a full 2 weeks, but close to it. And then, you know, basically you lose 2 days of your life just in traveling back and forth. And so I told Teresa, I'm about 51% that we go and we do this. And then at one point I told her it was like 60% I'm leaning toward go. And it just kind of goes back and forth. But then, like, over the course of a day, this was a few days ago, I just realized, no, we're not going and all this. So anyway, so with that as a backdrop, I mean, a lot of people would look at that. A lot of Christians will look at that. Okay, I got to figure out what is God's will here. Is Jesus leading me to go on this trip? Again, forget the golf. You know, so no comments about the golf.
It's hard to forget the golf when it's the whole point of the trip.
Some magical trip to some wonderful place and all this.
Right.
And meet some neat people and all this. But, and so... You know, a lot of Christians would be looking at it, and so I was not looking at it from this standpoint, but a lot of Christians would look at the standpoint, okay, what's God's will? You know, I want to follow Jesus, and so I got to figure out, it's almost like there's a fork in the road up ahead, and Jesus has already taken one of the forks, but it's kind of foggy, and I can't really see which one he's on, and I've got to figure out, is he going to Scotland, and I'm going to follow him there, or what if he's not going to Scotland, and he stays here, and I go to Scotland, then all of a sudden I'm not following him anymore.
And I do have some insight on this.
Okay.
But go ahead.
But I think this is useful for people.
Yeah, I got you.
Is a lot of decision making. So this was not, contrary to what you may think, this was not a moral, immoral choice here, you know, between going or not going. So the way I was looking at it, and so this relates to life in the new covenant, life on this side of the cross, that we are not separated from Christ. We are one with Christ. We are a part of his body. We have been joined one spirit with him. And so it's not a matter of us, you know, following him in that regard or he follows up. And so it's not a choice between what do I want to do and what does Jesus want me to do here? You know, and I think too many Christians couch decisions in that.
Oh, yeah.
And so what do I want to do versus what does Jesus want me to do? As if Jesus and I are on opposing teams. Well, when we realize, okay, in Christ, I have been new and made a new creation. When I realize my old self was crucified at the cross. Christ now is my life. I'm a part of his body. I have been raised with him, seated with him in the heavenlies. He is my life. Then it doesn't become a question of what do I want to do versus what Jesus wants me to do. It's a question of what do I want to do, knowing that I am now Christ in me? What does Christ in me want to do? And so it becomes a question of what is really in my heart to do. Now, if there's some temptation that is obviously of the flesh, that's not a question of me versus Jesus. That's a question of Christ in me versus the flesh, which is an external force and all that. But I decided for various reasons, don't know, details are not important, that I just, no, it's really not the time for us to go, that I really, as much as parts of it I enjoyed it, now I really don't want to go. So I didn't see it as, okay, I wanted to go, but Jesus didn't want me to go, so I'm going to follow Jesus and I'm going to stay. No, that's not the way I looked at it. So I looked at it as, you know, my heart is not fully in it to go, and I really just would rather not go this year, and so I'm comfortable with that. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts.
Okay.
First of all, you look at it far deeper than I do. Okay. For me, so. First of all, if it's a, you know, an obviously an immoral choice of some kind, which is not, then it's two things fall in play. One is whatever you do in word or deed, do it all to the glory of Christ. In other words, whatever you do, just put God into it and be thankful to God for it and go have a good time.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing I do, I like Paul's approach in Acts where he traveled around trying to figure out where to go and start churches and all that. And he didn't sit around and ponder, okay, did God want me to go to Mesopotamia? Does God want me to go to Athens? Where does God want me to go? You know, he just kind of went around and God would close doors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of that good way to pray is just, Lord, if there's anything that about this trip I shouldn't be doing or I don't know about, could you just close the door or just show that to me?
Or reveal insights or aspects that we hadn't thought of. Okay, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Okay, in light of that, no, I probably don't want to go. So, yeah.
Right. Same thing. Just if there's anything, reason I wouldn't. I mean, I think God leaves a lot of stuff up to us. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like going out and picking out a car. I mean, really, does God care whether you get the Toyota or the Nissan or whatever? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, there's some things, but I don't mind praying, Lord, if there's anything wrong with these cars, let me know that and kind of show me that so I'm not making a mistake. But, you know, there's preference. But
if Nissan advertised in a bad movie, then you don't want to buy a Nissan because you don't want to spend it.
That's a never ending. Yeah. So anyway, I just, you know, it's my, I kind of, in a way, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I just kind of put the burden on God. God, if there's something about this you don't want me to do, you just gonna have to show me, because right now I'm just left to my own and I'm just going to make a decision here. I'm not going to feel guilty about it.
I think the little child analogy comes into play here. A lot of times, you know, if our grandkids or little kid or something, okay, we got to decide what we're going to do. Yeah. Are we going to play with this or are we going to play with that?
Yeah.
As a papa, it doesn't matter to me. Yeah. I just want to be with you. I want you to have fun. And which one do you want to play with?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, so I think a lot of times we put too much weight on the decision. And so my wishwashiness wasn't in terms of guilt versus not guilt or God's will, not, you know, what had anything to do with it. It was just kind of figuring out, what do I really want to do here?
Well, and one of the things I don't like is the old phrase, you know, well, the safest place to be is in the center of God's will. In other words, if I just make the right choice, I'll be safe. You know, well, tell that to the Apostle Paul, you know, I mean, he was in a lot of situations that weren't very safe. But it's the whole idea of, we do look at decisions, the fork in the road, and if I take the wrong fork, then I'm all of a sudden on the entirely wrong
outside
path.
Outside of God's will.
Outside of God's will.
Or the perfect will. You know, it's not enough to be in the will of God. You have to be in the perfect will. It's right smack. So,
I mean, we make
whatever
it
that
so
means.
Difficult, you know.
And so, you know, and again, I want to make it's not that we, you know, that we always make a decision for what is the most painless life of ease, and we're not saying that. Sometimes we do, you know, I think God puts it in our heart to make choices that are not pleasant.
Right, right.
And are not even in the best interest of our temporal well-being. So we're not saying we always follow the course of the flesh and that, right? You know, we don't do that. But there's a lot of leeway there. And so.
Let me say it this way to you. See if you agree with this. I put the burden on God to show me if there's a wrong decision in this, rather than the burden on myself to figure out which one is the perfect decision.
Yeah, I would.
Because I know I'm not capable of that anyway. You have no idea with what any major decision, even mediocre decisions in life, what it might lead to down the road, good or bad. You really don't know. To think you can figure all that out, I think, is just a fantasy. But I can say to God, if there's one of these decisions is a real problem, and something you don't want to do, then you're just gonna have to show me, because right now I don't see it. And you know.
One thing I want to mention before we get away too far down the road, another podcast, Network 220 convention. So this involves another trip that I am going on. So late April, I think it's around April 21st, 2nd,
Atlanta,
3rd,
right?
In the Atlanta area, you know, right in the Atlanta area. It's kind of on the northwest side of Atlanta.
Like Alpharetta area?
No, Alpharetta is a little bit northeast, I think.
Okay.
So this is a little north-northwest side of Atlanta. But it's pretty close into Atlanta, so it's not like it's, you know, an hour outside or anything like that. But it's that next to last weekend in April. So the part that's open to the public is Friday night, the 22nd, and all day the 23rd. It's at a church there, and I forget the name of the church.
What part of it's not open to the public? What
do you mean? there are some workshop or a couple of other meeting type of things earlier in the day on Friday. And so there's a reception Thursday night for, so as we're, you know, just some people might not be aware, there is an organization called Network 220, and their website, if you want to find out more about this, it's Network 220, 220 being the numbers, 220. So network220.org is their website, and they have this yearly convention conference. There's typically a couple hundred, 250 people, maybe 300, something like that. And, they'll have basically one speaker after another Friday night and Saturday. They have a couple of smaller workshop breakout type of things during the day Saturday, but it's Friday evening, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. Andrew Farley, John Lynch, Ralph Harris, Tim Chalice, some others will be speaking, and it's just a great time to see a lot of people that, that we know through Facebook. So anyway, I'm going. Teresa's not able to go, so Dawson's going with me. My youngest son Dawson's going with me. He's heard some of these guys speak and read some of their books, so he's looking forward to meeting some of them.
Yeah.
So he's going with me. I will have a. I will be faithfully manning the Fields Brothers table in the exhibit hall, and selling books there at the table,
hawking our stuff over there at the Network 220.
So one for $10, two for $20. but looking forward to that. So if anyone, you know, is inclined to that's not already planning, wanting to go to Atlanta during that time. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Also, Andrew, I've learned, is speaking at one of the local congregations that next morning, so I may stick around and
you know which one
as well. I don't know off the top of my head. I saw it, but
is it at a church or where is it at?
The actual conference is at a church building, Baptist church there in the area.
All right,
and so it ends Saturday night. Sometimes they go over to Sunday morning, but in this case, they end Saturday night. I assume partly because it's at a church building, so church buildings tend to have other things going on Sunday mornings. So that is the Network 220 convention. I was recently on a guest on somebody else's podcast, so I wanted to mention that. There is a podcast I was not familiar with until recently called Resolute Men Podcast. A fellow named Rob Billingham hosts that, and I did not know him until recently, but seems like a really good guy and kind of on board with kind of our view of things and coming to appreciate grace and the new covenant on this side of the cross. And so he invited me to be a guest. And so we had a great conversation the other day. He's going to divide it up into two different podcasts. One of them has already been published, so there'll be a part one and part two. But if you want to hear my conversation with Rob, look up Resolute Men Podcast and all the major podcast apps, and you can find that. So I've got some other things, but I've been doing a lot of the talking here. What do you got other stuff?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm reading a pretty fascinating book I want to tell you about. Now, this is a little bit off the beaten path of what we normally discuss.
Okay.
It's not a Christian book, but I read a lot of these lists of books that people ought to read, you know, some number of self-help books or business books or whatever. And there's one book that always comes up on just about every list. I said, look at this. It's a book called Atomic Habits. Have you heard of this?
No, I've not heard of it.
It's on all kinds of lists, and everybody just raves over this. I'm like, well, what is the deal with this book? So I got this thing, and it is pretty good. It's not what I kind of thought it would be, but it's just about how you can make little change in your life and just how the little change and how to do that real simply without a lot of effort and how that kind of accumulates. And so while I believe that, you know, grace, our position of grace in God, we rest in what he's done with us, so we have nothing to do as far as relationship with him, but we still live in this world, and we still have things. If you're a, you know, whatever it is, if you're an athlete, for instance, if you want to, even you can be a believer, you know, an athlete who still wants to be a good baseball hitter, you're still going to have to apply yourself to learn how to hit a baseball. And so in life, we still apply ourselves to learn what to do and how to, you know, in my case, I'm a realtor, you know, so... And so anyway, one of the observations he makes, I'll give you one little tidbit on here. He talks about that if you want to see better change, you start off with your identity, not what you're doing. Well, I've heard that before. He says, like, for instance, if you want to play guitar, you don't start off with, well, I want to learn to play the guitar. You start off with, I'm a musician.
Okay.
If you're playing basketball, I'm an athlete. If you start with a position of your identity, it's easier to let that then go out into how it works out into your habit forming or your life. And
then you're doing something according to who you are.
Yeah, to who you are. And I thought, well, I've heard that idea before. Yeah. And so some of the ideas are really fairly consistent.
Is this a new book just in the last year or two?
No, it's not in the last year or two, but it hadn't been out too long, I don't think. A few years. But it's, you know, it's been a New York Times number one bestseller, and it's but it's a pretty interesting book, and it makes, you know, it makes it a lot easier if you do want to see, like, your, you know, just if you procrastinate, for instance, mm-hmm. this is a big help in how not to procrastinate.
And so how would that apply? So if you start with identity, then
I'm not sure the identity idea that some other things in the book that apply more to procrastination. Right. I don't want to get into the depth in the book, but I'm just saying, if you're looking for something like that, you might like this book.
Okay, very good. The great quote from Ralph Harris, who will be at the Network 220. I mentioned his name a while ago, but he and we may have talked about this before, but it's been a long time. But the abide in me verses in John 15. There was a time in my life years ago when I did a bunch of reading on that. Andrew Murray was known. I liked a lot of his stuff.
Prayer still guy,
likes
right?
to be there. Yeah. He wrote some on prayer, but not, there was another guy that's kind of known for their prayer, I think. But he wrote a lot of short books, and a lot of them along the lines of abide in me. So Ralph writes this: all of the quote unquote abide in me verses in the book of John were set up for what was to come, but had not yet the cross and the resurrection of Jesus. Through faith in Jesus, the setup is now complete, and we are in him. We are in him, abiding securely. Not only did you receive Christ through faith, but he received you through the cross and resurrection. It's not just that you were given your life to him. It's that he's given his life to you. You're in him, and he is in you, abiding together in harmony. Think about that, and you'll enjoy it all the more. So the idea, there was a time in my life where I really was focused on needing to abide in Christ. Right.
What do you got to do to abide?
Well, I've got to make sure
I'm abiding
in Christ.
How much prayer do you have
today?
To pray? How much Bible reading you have to read to abide in
you? And it's kind of weird because you realize, okay, we can't work for it. It's by grace. We need to rest. But I need to abide. So I got to make sure I'm abiding. And you end up with some weird concoction of working but not working and striving but not striving. And so it's been a bit of a revelation to me in the last 5, 6, 7 years to know this whole abiding in Christ. So that's John 15, Jesus speaking to the disciples in the upper room, really close to the time of the cross and the resurrection, but it happened, you know, hasn't happened yet. That abiding in him, and 1 John kind of brings this out too, that concept of abiding is in 1 John. But the reality is in the new, you know, that need or the need to abide in Christ is granted to us freely and fully in the new covenant through the cross and the resurrection, our old self crucified with him. We're raised with him. He is in us. We are in him. And so every believer by definition always is abiding in Christ. Right. I mean, that's just what it means to be in Christ.
Right.
We live in Kentucky. I don't wake up in the morning saying, okay, I got to abide in Kentucky today. I got to abide in Kentucky. No, I am in Kentucky. So, and that, I think that is new to a lot of believers that, you know, I got to pray more, I got to read the Bible more so that I can abide in Christ rather than, you know, it's by faith. That's what it means to live by faith, to live by what already is, not what I want to try to make happen.
Not what you're longing for.
Right? Yeah, not what I'm longing for. So living by faith is living by what, according to what already is. And so in this case, I am in Christ. He's in me. And it's another point where we just breathe a huge sigh of relief. And say, whew, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, and we go from there. So I really appreciate Ralph bringing that up. I thought of this the other day. You know, we don't want to act like cross deniers. You know, we heard that term denier is applied to a bunch of stuff like, 9/11 deniers or this denier and that denier and things like that.
Truth deniers.
Truth denier, whatever. Yeah. A lot of Christians are kind of cross deniers, you know, that we lose sight of what has happened at the cross. And when we're trying to get more forgiven, trying to get closer to God, trying to abide in him, we're basically denying what took place at the cross.
Oh, yeah. We've said many times, or how many times have we said this, that if you took the cross completely out of the equation, it wouldn't change anything in most churches. It wouldn't change anything. We're all still just trying to follow Jesus. You know, we're still trying to do good things. We're still trying to change the world, trying to do all of our stuff. It really wouldn't have had any effect. I mean, we have completely, in a practical way, disregard the cross. And what's the verse that talks about that, you know, that if you take your eyes off the cross, basically I'm going to mess up the person.
Empty
the cross of his power. That's it.
First Corinthians. I think it's 1 Corinthians 1. Yeah.
And so,
lest we empty the cross of its power.
And that's kind of what we've done. We've made the cross a symbol. It's just our logo. The cross is our logo for Christianity. It's not something that we, you know, pull from. For grace, for power, for living, for anything.
Another great quote I came across, this is from the book The Cure. John Lynch and a couple of the others wrote that, and I think you'll like this. It says, quote, "Nothing defines religion quite as well as attempting impossible tasks with limited power, all while pretending that it's working."
So, all right, say that again. Read that again.
Nothing defines religion quite as well as this. Okay.
All right.
Attempting impossible tasks with limited power, all while pretending that it's working.
That is pretty good. That's a pretty good definition.
It's all three of those components. You know, so it's a possible task. I'm going to live the Christian life. Okay, then I'm going to try to do that with limited power, just my own flesh.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to pretend that it's working just fine. So that really does capture a lot of that. So shout out to the guys who wrote The Cure for that great quote on this.
Yeah, that is pretty good. I like that. Well, what else you got going on over there?
Well,
you giving up anything for Lent, Jeff?
You know, I was going to bring that. I was going to let's save that till the next podcast. Okay, I had that written
down. All right,
we
got to reveal it now.
I was going to ask you about Lent, what you think about Lent and all that. So let's do that in the next podcast. All right.
Well, I have a Lent brush that takes out Lent.
Oh, yours.
Okay. I'll be here all week.